for Big Blue Kickoff Live. Only on Giants.com.
Smith back to throw. Pass time over the middle. Intercepted by Roll again. Antrell to the 20. Needs a block. Pinball down to the 5. Roll call time. Antrell with back-to-back picks.
Manning back to throw. Steps up. Deep ball down the middle of the field.
He's got Cruz. 35, 30, 20, 10, 5. Touchdown, Giants.
Romo drops straight back to throw. Steps up. Gets hit by Canty.
Pass intercepted by Jason Pierre-Paul. To the 10, to the 5. Touchdown, Giants.
There goes Wilson again. Trying to break to the outside. Wilson cuts it back to his right. Needs a block, and Wilson's going to go. He's to the 10, 5. Touchdown, Giants. 97 yards.
Now here are your hosts, John Schmelk and Paul Dottino.
Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. 201-939-4513. 201-939-4513. And we decided to bring in Paulie Dottino today to give us a hand. Paulie, good morning. How are you, pal?
John, great to see you again. And, you know, I'm counting down the days now until we actually start training camp. The guys reporting, obviously, for the physicals on the 26th. That first practice on the 27th. I've got this big blue X on my calendar in my home office at home, and I just can't wait to go.
It should be exciting. And whenever you get training camp, you got guys actually put some pads on so you can see maybe what some of these guys can actually do when you're actually hitting somebody. Granted, it's their own teammates right now, but you still get a decent feeling of exactly what these guys are going to do when the live bullets start flying. And how have you been spending the last, you know, few weeks? I haven't seen you here, which has been really pleasant, by the way, just pointing that out.
Yeah, thanks a whole lot.
How's everything been going?
Yeah, things are okay. You know, it's downtime. This is really the black hole of our schedule, John. You know, from the time that the guys leave after minicamp until the time the guys come in for the actual training camp. This is like that Bermuda Triangle, so to speak, where ships get lost at sea. And that's kind of what happens to me. I get lost at sea. I do a lot of extra miles.
But you keep coming back, unfortunately.
Yeah, I do. I do. But I tell you what, John, honestly, I think I messaged you the other day. It's kind of like the frozen ketchup trying to just ooze it out of the bottle. The anticipation when you get down to the final 2 weeks is absolutely deadly. I mean, I'm just raring to go.
We actually did have some news, though. Victor Cruz making his return to the Giants, something that both of us thought would happen around this time. I think maybe both of us thought it would happen a little bit closer to camp than it actually did.
Yep.
But they come in with a deal that averages out to, depending on how you want to do the math, either it's an extension or you include the tender, somewhere between $7.5 and $8.5 million a year, which is where both of us thought it was eventually going to fall. I thought maybe it would be a little bit closer to $9 million after they compromised a little bit. But this is a good deal for the Giants. It's a good deal for Cruz in that he gets his guaranteed money. He's not playing under that tender offer, and everyone seems pretty happy about it.
John, I look at it as the six-year deal worth about $46 million. I include the fact that the tender was ripped up and restructured. I don't think you can look at it any other way because he's yet to play that tender season.
So you're basically looking at like a $7.8 million
year contract. It's about $7.6 million, yeah. I think, is what it comes down to. And that makes him the 18th highest-paid wide receiver in average salary in the National Football
League.
Which
probably makes him a little underpaid, to be honest with you.
And it also makes him the highest-paid, quote, slot receiver in the NFL. So it depends on how you want to look at it.
Welker didn't get 8 this year from Denver?
Well, again, I'm talking about average salary over the length of the contract.
Okay.
Welker's not making 7.56 or whatever million a year on the average salary.
Maybe
he's
he got 7, Welker? I don't know.
He's a little under that. So's Amendola. The guy right behind Victor Cruz on the NFL's receiving salary chart is Steve Smith of the Panthers, who's making just a fraction under what Cruz is now making on an annual basis. Again, I'm looking at it as a six-year deal for roughly $46 million. I have a hard time looking at it as a five-year because he hasn't played this first year and the deal was redone. So, yes, I think it's a good deal. I will tell you this, without giving anybody up, my understanding was middle of last season when the Giants talked to Victor Cruz and he himself said to everybody, I think we're pretty close on a deal. We've got a framework going. Well, guess what? The Giants offered him $7.5 million a year then. So it's not a whole lot different than what he got as to what the Giants originally offered. This was all about Victor Cruz coming to his senses and putting his signature on the dotted line for a deal basically that the Giants wanted him to take. The only thing that's different, John, as I understand it, is the length of the deal. The length of the deal is a little bit longer than what the Giants had originally offered. I think it might have been 4 or maybe 5 total. Now it turns out to be a 6-year total. So, you know, he did get a little more, I suppose, if you look at it that way.
Hey, look, and this is what a player does when he decides to sign a long-term deal as a restricted free agent. You're generally going to get a little bit less than if you wait until your unrestricted year because you don't have a ton of leverage, and Victor Cruz would rather have the security than try to cash in with a huge money contract next season, which, quite frankly, from his perspective, we've been saying it since the start of the offseason, was probably the smart, wise thing to do.
John, $15.6 million guaranteed.
It's pretty good.
The first 2 years of the deal, I mean...
And the Giants also, by the way, didn't have to renegotiate any contracts because the tender already fit under the cap for this year, and all that guaranteed money is not going to kick in until the 2014 cap.
And that's the beauty of this because, as we both know, Eli Manning had publicly said earlier in the offseason he'd be willing to redo some numbers to help get Cruz in if necessary. Now, some other guys redid some numbers and took some pay cuts. David Deal himself had said that he was hoping that his pay cut would help Cruz come in. Corey Webster took a pay cut. He just wanted to save his own job. Uh-huh. And I get that, and that's fine. But, you know, the bottom line is, you're right. The Giants still have about 3.7, I think, under the cap.
You got to use that on Pew and Nassib, though, correct?
Pew's going to get about 1.5 on that cap. So that'll bring it down to roughly 2.
They'll be about at the cap number once those guys are taken care of.
Nassib's bonus money's going to count on the cap.
Right.
His salary won't because I don't think he's going to be one of the highest paid 51 players.
Okay.
So his bonus money will count. So that'll be a couple hundred thousand. And then when they spread that out, that's not going to be a whole lot. So, yeah, the Giants are in good shape. Let me tell you something, John. I've been around a long time. There have been years the Giants
we can all tell
have gone into the season with a lot less than even $1 million under the cap.
Well, of course.
So if Jerry Reese can go into opening day, and that, of course, assumes they're not going to do anything else in the meantime, and I suspect that he probably will, especially at running back. If he can go in to opening day with anything more than $1.5 million and something close to $2 million, he's got to be feeling really good.
Remember that with the new rules, so you can carry that money over to the following year's cap, any savings, and add that onto next year's number, which also is a possibility. I know you mentioned it, and we'll get to our question of the day, by the way, in a second. And you guys can start thinking about it if you want to call in. We have three guys on hold. Frank, we'll get to you and the rest of the guys in a second. Who do you think the most underrated player is on the Giants this season and then all time as well? So you can throw that out there, let it ruminate a little bit, think about it. Give us a call. Let us know what you think. Current, all-time, who's the most underrated Giant? But you mentioned the running back, and I've talked about this the last couple of weeks. To me, if they were going to make a move for a veteran running back that was on the market, they would have done it by now.
Yeah.
I'm not saying a guy is not going to get brought in at some point, but I think right now we're going to have to wait to see that first round of cuts during training camp if somebody gets cut loose that the Giants think are an upgrade over what they currently have on the roster.
John, I think they've had their radar set on running backs for the last couple of months. They have not seen anything they liked. They are going to be forced to, A, either make sure that their current guys are coached up well enough to do what they want them to do, or, you're right, they're going to have to look at that first round of cuts. And, John, it might even take the second round of cuts before somebody is good enough for them to take a flyer.
And we'll see what happens because, you know, that's only time will tell what happens when other teams get into camp and they decide what they're going to do. 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants chat. Let's start with our buddy Frank in New York City. Frank, what's going on, pal? How are you?
Hey, guys. Good morning. Paul, hello. How you doing?
Good to talk to you, Frank.
So, I'm very excited about the Cruz contract. I think it was a great move by Cruz, a great move by Reese. I've been saying it all summer. I think he did a great job in the offseason. I think Reese solidified himself as probably one of the best GMs in football and probably even in New York sports right now. Just the way we're set up now with maybe next year, if Knicks has a huge year, we could franchise him, get another year out of Randall for a tryout possibly. So I think on all fronts, it's really exciting to see that we could actually go into training camp really with only storylines is who's going to win position battles. And I think that's a great great offseason when you can go into the training camp just figuring out who's going to win positions when there's no contract and holdouts booming over anybody's head. So I think Reese did a great job, and I'm looking forward to the season starting.
Yeah, no question. And Frank, and I would also add, don't waste a lot of time today worrying about Akeem Nicks for next year, only because, like you mentioned, they have that franchise option if he has a big year, and if he does have a banged-up injured year, the Giants could either get him on a discount or decide to go in a different direction. So I would not sweat Akeem Nicks now. Wait to see how the season plays out first.
Absolutely. So now on the most underrated Giant, I know it was mentioned yesterday towards the tail end, Carl Banks. He's one of the choices that I was thinking of. But another guy that I was thinking of is Amani Toomer. I know he's in the Ring of Honor. But if you look at the span of his career, the different teams that he played on, some really good, some really bad, I think when you think underrated, he was never, I don't believe he ever made a Pro Bowl. He was never one of the top 15, 20 wide receivers in football. But he was a very steady, good Giant, and he had a great career for us. And I think he's probably one of the ones that I would think of.
You know, Carl, I got to tell you, Frank, a lot depends on who is doing the underrating. Whether or not it's educated people, fans, media, players, coaches, who's doing the underrating? I don't believe Amani Toomer was underrated. Anybody who I talk to respects him as the greatest wide receiver in Giants history, a guy who was just one small notch below Pro Bowl caliber. And I think there were many years, especially during his prime, where he was in the top 15 wide receivers in the NFL. So I don't know.
Top 15, sure, yeah.
Yeah, so I don't know where you come up with a grade that says he wasn't, because I think, Frank, people recognize him for what he was, an outstanding player who was not a Pro Bowl player, but nonetheless, one small notch below. Kind of like when people say Don Mattingly's not quite a Hall of Famer, he's a notch below. Amani Toomer, he's that. He's a notch below a perennial Pro Bowl player, but a really excellent wide receiver and the greatest the Giants have ever had.
No, you are probably right about that. I just look at, if you know, you look around, he was just, to me, I agree with you, Paul. I think what he did for the Giants was he is. As of now, he's the greatest wide receiver in history. But I just feel like if you talk about the Super Bowl years, it was Cruz and the last Super Bowl, it was Forrest. He was really never mentioned as one of, if you look at maybe even the top players on the teams during those years. I feel that his touchdown catch against Dallas that year in the playoffs, that set the tone for the game.
It did.
Well, without question. And, you know, the thing about Amani is that, unfortunately, his career curve kind of paralleled the career curve of Harry Carson, where his better years were before the Super Bowl championship.
He did get to the Super Bowl, though, during his prime.
Well, he did. He did. I mean, the 2000 NFC Championship team that got killed by the Ravens.
He was excellent that year.
And you know what? I think people recognized him as a star player at that time. But because they didn't win the championship, that kind of goes unnoticed a little bit. You know what I mean? But then they finally got the title after, you know, his apex of his career. But Frank, it's a great question. I'm glad we asked it. I will tell you, John and I talked about it off the air. And
thanks for the call, Frank, by the way.
Thank
appreciate
you.
It.
Have a great day, guys. Have a great day, guys.
Thanks.
I'm going to save mine for just a few more minutes, John, but I've clearly got who I believe is the most underrated all-time Giant, and I think NFL.com totally missed the boat, and I am absolutely, positively, 100% stone-cold cemented in on this guy.
How about this nugget for you, by the way? You mentioned that you don't think Toomer's underrated. You compare him to Don Mattingly. If you talk to your average New York sports fan, I think they think Don Mattingly was a much, much better player than Amani Toomer was. And is much more popular and gets much more attention and is much more front and center.
I'm comparing Mattingly falling short of the Hall of Fame as compared to Toomer falling short of Pro Bowl. That's what I'm saying.
Different level. Okay.
Different
I can see
level.
That. That's fair. I can
different
see
different level, okay. But on the cusp of getting to that next level.
I'll buy that. That's fair.
That's what I'm saying.
That's fair. And I agree with Banks to a certain extent, by the way, because so many people pay attention to LT, even Harry Carson. And I feel like a lot of times Banks is lost in that mix, and people don't realize that the stuff that he did well allowed LT to be the guy that he was.
It truly was one of the, and you could argue this, one of the top three linebacking units in modern-day NFL history.
You like that Giants group. You got to like the New Orleans Saints group with Swilling and Mills and Ricky Jackson. I always forget the fourth guy in that group.
Vaughn.
Oh, yeah, that's right, Vaughn. And then you have, obviously, the Steelers had a very good group with, you know, Lloyd and Green, and the Steelers from the 70s had a very good group
Lambert.
Right, obviously.
Jack Ham. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, but you could make a very strong argument. The Giants are certainly top three with those guys. But here's the thing,
and
John,
I'll tell you what, you know what? When we look back in 10, 15 years, the San Francisco 49ers of today might be in that mix too with Bowman, Patrick Willis, and Aldon Smith.
Let's see how long they stay together.
That's true. Well, I think they're all pretty much signed up long term, aren't they, except for Smith?
But they got to avoid injury.
That's true.
You know, guy gets knocked off the
field. I'm saying they could be. In 10 years, we could be having that conversation.
We could
Bowman,
be.
Willis, and Aldon. Smith's a great pass rusher, and those two inside linebacker are as good as you get.
Yeah,
they're excellent.
It's certainly possible. I wouldn't argue that at all. But, you know, it's funny, John, when people have asked me this question before, it didn't just come up now on NFL.com. I've had this question asked many times over the years, and Banks comes up a lot from the modern-day fan and the young fan who certainly – recognizes what Carl Banks was, and I think a lot of people outside New York maybe didn't give him the credit he was due.
That's what I mean.
But people in New York, I think, know what a terrific giant Carl Banks was.
Right.
And he did get to a Pro Bowl, by the way. At least he got to one. Amani never got to one, which is unfortunate. But
wow,
at least Carl
didn't get to one Pro Bowl.
No,
huh?
No, he didn't.
I didn't realize that.
No, he didn't. You know,
I should have known that. I didn't realize that.
And that's a shame. Because he was right there. You know, he was right on the cusp.
I just can't believe you couldn't stuff the ballot box enough to get him in.
I tried.
I guess you didn't work hard enough, Paul.
I know. But at least Carl did get to go to Hawaii.
Correct. 201. And he was in a couple first-team All-Pros, too,
a couple years.
201, 9-3. And I think he was on the All-Pro team for the 80s.
He was the All-Decade. Yeah, All-Decade strong side backer for the 80s.
201, 939-4513. Lawrence in Florida. Lawrence, good morning.
Oh, hi. How are you?
Good morning, Lawrence.
I'm excited. I'm glad that P-Dot's on today. And I'm excited because all morning I was thinking about which is going to be the best underrated Giant. And I just wrote down a list.
All right, what do you got for me?
Lawrence, okay. So hold on. Before you say that, how long you been a Giants fan?
Well, my first big game that I remember was, and I'm still shook up about, when the Giants lost 14-10. 63 against Chicago
with
Billy Wade.
You can give us a legitimate list of guys now, okay? Because I don't want guys saying they're Giants fans for like 10 years and giving me wishy-washy names.
Well, if somebody's 21 years old, they can only be a fan for 10 years. Go ahead, Lawrence.
Go, Lawrence.
Well, anyway, I'm going to just rattle off a bunch of names. I don't know how many people remember this, but Tom Landry, he was a defensive back on the Giants.
Right.
And they remember Eric Bonds. He was with Cleveland. He was considered a dirty player. Then when he came to the Giants, he was a crafty veteran.
And I also played for the Packers too.
Okay. And then I remember that Spider Lockhart, that Clarence Childs, Henry Carr, Jimmy Pat, number 20, Dick Lynch, 22, Pete Athus.
Well, Pete Athus was not good, Lawrence. Hold on, Pete Athus was not good. He was not good.
Yeah, but remember, he was dating Vicky LaMotta.
And that makes him underrated.
Okay.
Lord, you're killing me.
All right. And then I'm going with the defensive line. One of the all-top defensive lines people have forgotten about is when they had Jack Gregory as the Rover. Remember John Mendenhall?
Sure do.
He ended up going to and Troy Archer was going to be an all-star, and then he got killed in a car crash.
That's correct.
And George Martin, and then behind them was Carson, Brian Kelly, and Brad Van Pelt. I remember Carson was mad. He was going to quit the Giants to become a jet pilot.
That was a heck of a front seven. It really was.
Yeah. And then I remember some of the receivers, Del Sharpton. I'm still aggravated at Del Sharpton because in that championship game, the ball slid off his hand in the end zone, and then they intercepted. And remember Homer Jones, he invented the spike.
Yeah, but you listed a lot of guys, though, who are not underrated, Lawrence. About 80% of the guys you just mentioned have gotten their just due. The question is, who's the most underrated? Lawrence, give me one guy. Come on, one guy who you think has been slighted. Come on,
you know who it is.
You know who it is. Come on.
Well, Joe Morrison, number
Bingo!
Four.
Bingo! There you go! There you go, Lawrence! You got it. You're a real fan. You're a real, true Blue Giants fan.
He played flanker back. He played running fullback, running back, and he was also the third-string quarterback.
And
then another running back.
And he also played both wide receiver positions, the split end and the flanker, and also played some defensive back in emergency situations. Joel Morrison is by far the answer to this question, and anybody who says otherwise has no clue as to the Giants' history. Nothing. They know nothing. Joel Morris is the answer. Case closed, Lawrence.
Number 40, Joe Morrison.
Yes, sir.
And then another guy they forgot about is, remember, Doug Kotar.
Well, you know,
he was a good running back. Kota was a good player.
Kota was a good player. Lawrence
was the first 1,000 yards.
Right, Lawrence. We're going to let you go, but I am so proud. I am so proud that here we are, second caller of the show, comes up with the answer. Joe Morrison, the definitive one and only answer.
Thank you, Lawrence.
Number 40.
Okay. I appreciate it. Have a good one. Oh boy.
I'm so happy.
I could just go back to my desk and put the headset down. You can just take this the rest of the way. You're going to do 20 minutes on Joe Morrison.
I'm just so happy, though. I'm so happy that a true Blue Giants fan came up with the correct answer, the only answer.
You know, this is an opinion question.
No, there's no opinion. There is no opinion.
Oh, man.
John, the guy played 5 different positions. You know, Gift did that back in the 50s for the Giants in the early 60s, and everybody hailed him, you know, made the Pro Bowl at 3 or 4 of the positions, was in the championship games, et cetera, et cetera. Joe Morrison basically did the same type of thing, not quite to the level of Frank Gifford. He was not a Pro Bowl player, but he was functional, and he did it over a long period of time, but for horrible teams, and I mean horrible teams.
Yeah, the 60s wasn't exactly a and early 70s, not exactly banner seasons for the New York Giants franchise.
Oh, just dreadful.
You just see the look on Paul's face right now. He's reliving all those games in his own head. It's actually kind of amusing.
Oh, mighty. Well, look, for anybody out there who understands why this is the right answer, you probably also remember when Dick Schneider was a backup quarterback, Jim Delgazzo, Carl Summerall. You probably remember all those guys.
Who's Vicky LaMotta, by the way?
Never mind.
No, I don't know who it is. I don't know Vicky LaMotta.
Go to the next call.
Oh, come on. You got to get it in front of me here.
Go to the next call. That's not football. Go to the next call. Go to the next call.
I have, like, a bunch of people on Twitter. By the way,
what do you got?
That's your all-time. You also think, I'm not going to give the answer now, but also we want the current Giant that you believe is the most underrated. So
okay.
Think about that for a little while.
That's
Backdoor phones. Say hello to Carlos down in Virginia. Carlos, good morning.
Hey, how you doing?
What's up, Carlos?
Hey, everything's good. I just saw him. He was talking about underrated players. All I could think of was two in the back of my head. One being Jeff Hostetler, the quarterback.
Okay.
That took the Giants to the Super Bowl. I mean, in the early, you know, part of the 90s, and Jeremy Shockey. And the reason why I say
Shockey underrated,
because,
guy,
you know,
went to many Pro Bowls.
Yeah, you know what though? A lot of people were down on Shockey. It's funny. I think Shockey was one of those guys that almost went from overrated to underrated. When he first came in, people probably overrated him a little bit, and then people got so down on him because some of the stuff he would say and do that maybe he eventually did become somewhat underrated.
Yeah, but I was saying like my first one was Jeff Hostetler because he came in, you know, at a time when Phil, you know, as you remember, you know, Phil Simms was injured, and you know he came in, you know, at the right time, you know taking the Giants, you know, to the Super Bowl that year, and you know did fairly good, as far as you know directing everybody, you know, where they need to be as far as, you know, as passing and throwing, and you know, even though it was a close game that it ended in a field goal, but I think, you know, he was one of my, you know, one underrated player that I, you know, that I can think of.
Carlos, very brief comment. I think Hostetler, I don't know if he qualifies there because he played such a short time, but here's what I will say.
He was never really given the opportunity to prove that he was underrated.
Well, after they won the championship, Ray Handley went to him after, you know, the Giants came back to try to defend it. He picked him over Simms.
Yeah.
And Haas didn't exactly have a lot of great success.
He
there.
Did play well when he went to the Raiders, though, afterwards.
And he played for the Redskins, et cetera, et cetera. But I think when you ask this question, I think it's got to be someone who has had some sort of tenure with the team, not just, you know, the fact that he was a starter for 2 or 3 years. I think the guy's got to have at least a body of work, what would you say, 5, 6, 7 years, John? I think to pick somebody who, even though Haas was here for a long time, only played for a short while. I don't know that he really qualifies.
Thanks for the call, Carlos.
All right, thank you.
Appreciate it, man. Want to stay on our phones, or you want me to read some Twitter
Whatever
answers for
you?
Whatever
you got to do, John.
No, you tell me. What do you want me to do? Twitter or more calls?
Well, look, we got this one person on line 4 that I think was holding on for
he
a
has
while.
Been holding a while. You're right.
Let
it's a good
go.
Point. So let's go to it's our good buddy Shakes down in Baltimore. Shakes, what's going on, pal?
What's going on?
How are
what's
you, Shakes?
Up, Paul?
Hey, Shakes.
Hey, nothing. Wow. According to Paul, this question is over.
You got it, brother. It is over. It is done. Stick a fork in it, baby.
Okay. All right.
Who you got?
I want to get some names. How about my man Jumbo Elliott? Because, see, listen, I'm from the era from 1990 and beyond, you know.
Okay.
You know, so after, you know what I mean? So after that Super Bowl, that's my era. So I got Jumbo because he held that position down for a long time for us, and then he went to the Jets. But, you know, he was at later stages of his career. But as far as he helped us win that Super Bowl, if people don't remember. I want to give a couple more names, Papa Johnson and Ed McCaffrey. Ed McCaffrey with big catches. Big catches. And my current, and I don't know why people are down on him, but my man, Aaron Ross. Aaron Ross, he comes up big, and in both Super Bowls, he came up big in all those runs. So my man, Aaron Ross, needs some love. And, about Monty Kilmer being a Pro Bowler, he was actually an alternative one time, but he didn't make the game, but he was an alternative.
All right, Chase.
Well, John, why don't you address Ross, and I'll address the
other
guys.
What? I think Aaron Ross, to a certain extent, is somewhat underappreciated, and I think the problem with him is that he was a first-round pick shake, so a lot of people expected him to be a shutdown corner. I mean, he was drafted, one pick after Darrelle Revis, so people want him to be a Revis caliber player, and certainly he didn't meet those expectations. But I think, and I mentioned this with Shockey before, you know, Ross probably went from being an overrated guy to now people think he's a scrap heap guy, and he's certainly better than that. So now I would say, yeah, he probably is a little bit underrated in terms of what he can contribute to the team.
All right, the other three guys from yesteryear, I'm going to go through real quickly. Elliott and Pepper Johnson both made Pro Bowls. So I don't know if you could tag the underrated label on a guy who made a Pro Bowl. But if you're going to, I will say this. I do think that Jumbo Elliott really was a mainstay along that offensive line for a long time. And I guess I might bend on that one just a little bit.
Generally offensive linemen can be underrated.
That's a good point.
I think, quite frankly, David Deal has been very much underappreciated this time with the Giants. Very few guys can do what David Deal has done over the past 10 years, playing four different offensive line positions, starting, moving around, doing everything the team wants from him.
Yeah, so offensive linemen are almost by default part of this
conversation.
You almost can't help that. Pepper, I don't think, was underrated at all. I got to disagree with you on that. And Eddie McCaffrey was here a very short time and then made a big name for himself after he left the Giants. And
Elway.
Well, the Broncos.
He went to Denver,
So I can't give you McCaffrey. And I'll tell you something, though. Dan Reeves has often said, and I know he said to me face-to-face, the biggest mistake he made as a Giants coach was cutting Ed McCaffrey.
Yeah, because he made big catches. That's the reason why I said Ed McCaffrey with us, not just with Denver. He made big catches with us.
Yeah, but again, only with the Giants for a short time, though. You know, and that's why, again, I got a hard time putting him in the conversation. But I appreciate it, Shakes. Thanks.
All right, man. Thank you.
Appreciate it, brother. Good to hear from you. We'll talk to you tomorrow morning. 201-939-4513. Let's go to some Twitter questions here
real
quick, Paul. Two people have written in. One, Joe Giglio actually won the FAN fan host contest.
Sure. I know Joe.
He thinks Jaquan Williams and Jim Johnston writes in and says the same thing, Jaquan Williams being underrated on defense. I think he could be if he could stay healthy. He's had a problem getting on the field consistently. I think he is the most promise of and physical raw talent of the linebackers in the roster. But I'm not sure he's to the point of being underrated quite yet. I'm not sure he's done enough to earn that title.
John, I agree with you wholeheartedly.
Okay, let's see what else we got here. A lot of people are saying Eli Manning, just don't think he gets enough credit overall from people. You know, the people think he's better than, you know, the Breezes sometimes and the Rodgers, and generally people have him outside of that top five. So I think that's the theory between by Eli Manning. We got
Two-time Super Bowl MVP, though. It's hard to say he's underrated.
Allie Hubbard writes that in. David Goodman agrees. And Kay agrees with that as well.
Allie said Eli Manning?
Yeah.
Is that what you just told me?
Shocking.
I'm very surprised.
I know. David Jackson thinks Ancho Roll is the most underrated Giant on the current roster.
Do you want my answer?
His versatility is pretty valuable on defense, and he has saved their bacon being able to play that slot spot at corner.
And 2 years ago, he made the Pro Bowl.
Yes.
I'm gonna tell you who the answer is this year for this team.
All right. I honestly haven't given it a ton of thought.
For the current active Giants, it's Corey Webster. This guy who's been around for the better part of a decade, has been on two Super Bowl championship teams, has come up with some very significant plays over the years. Quite frankly, I thought that there were a couple of years there where he should deserve Pro Bowl consideration, did not get it, and now because he had a bad year last year and he was banged up, a lot of people are really down on him. I have taken more negative comments on my Twitter page about Corey Webster this year than I care to remember. And there's to me, he would be the answer, but I think David Deal would be a close second.
Yeah, the problem is that I think Webster is probably, at this point of his career, a little bit better of a player than Deal probably is.
Well, yeah, I agree with that, too.
Which is why I think right now Webster might be the better answer. A couple years ago, Deal might have been the proper response. Trying to think anybody else on this roster you can really say is underrated. Nobody at wide receiver or tight end. Nobody else really on the offensive line. I think people give David Boss a hard time sometimes, but I think he did a pretty darn good at center last year, and people don't talk about it a whole lot. I mean, nobody really talks much about Linval Joseph, and he had an excellent year on defense last year, a defensive tackle.
Highest-rated defensive lineman on the team.
I think that could be a guy you could talk about a little bit. But beyond that, I'm not really sure you can really find that many other underrated folks. I get the role idea, though, because, you know, he doesn't have all the big stats and numbers because he has to play corner the last couple of seasons. And I think, you know, a lot of people talked about this year will make him take a pay cut. This year you got to cut him after the year. And I'm not sure you can afford to do that with what he brings to the team.
Yeah, his ability to play that slot corner is certainly much valued by this staff. God knows they needed him to do it. But, again, I see a guy who's made the Pro Bowl a couple of times, did it with the Cardinals, has done it with the Giants. I have a hard time giving him that tag when he's gone to Hawaii. I'm sticking with Corey Webster, but I'm certainly willing to put David Deal right there with him. So that's why I'm not as definitive as I am about Joe Morrison.
Allie also writes in she thought Shockey was overrated. Saraceno agrees with you, says Corey Webster. He also thinks Anchar Roll can be included in that conversation as well. Let's see what else we got here, if we got any interesting comments coming in. Right now, he thinks Kiwanuka. But I don't think as a linebacker, Kiwanuka was underrated, because he never really put it together at that position.
And quite honestly, John, I think after we saw Kiwanuka flash as a rookie, most of us thought he was going to be a pretty forceful pass rusher as a defensive end.
Right.
And because of the injuries and the position switches, I quite think you could make a strong argument, again, number one pick, that his numbers have been rather underachieving and underwhelming during his Giants career. And that's, again, because of circumstances. I don't think it's necessarily because of his talent.
Andrew says Henry Hinoski, which isn't a bad pick. He's a very good lead blocker. A lot of people don't talk about that.
Only been here a couple of years, but I could see that potentially.
Joe Duffy says Joe Morris, never enough credit, one of the classiest guys ever. I think when he was at his best, though, Joe Morris probably got his due, right?
I think so, too. You know, certainly Pro Bowl, ran for 21 touchdowns 1 year. I think everybody knew Little Joe. I can't put him in that category.
T-Formation says Kiwanuka as well. Let's see. What else we got here? Nothing else really that looks that interesting to me. And I think that's pretty much all the names I see here. Felipe Soto has a question. Actually, my good God, Luski, it looks like it says Zach Diassi. Those long snappers, underappreciated in their own time.
Wow. Didn't even think of that. But all you have to do is think of Trey Junkin to realize how important long snappers
are.
Good
point. I'll tell you what. I think Diassi had his best year either as a long snapper last year. He was a little erratic at times, I think, with some of his snaps.
I thought since he took over the job last season was his worst.
And it wasn't a bad year, just compared to what usually has been a stellar first few years.
We've been used to his snaps being as automatic as a video game.
Right, pretty
you
much,
know, we
yeah.
really have.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's not a bad idea. Zach is worthy of mention.
And then Carl Banks writes in, he thinks Sebastian Telfair should be the next third point guard next year. So, clearly did not want to comment on the Giants stuff, but Sebastian Telfair, that That piques Carl's interest, apparently.
Knicks tip-off live, John, coming up next.
Yeah,
right?
And by the way, Knicks Summer League starts at 1 o'clock tomorrow.
Does
you
it?
Check out Tim Hardaway Jr., C.J. Leslie, Amon Shumpert's going to play in that on the team. So
yeah.
You have a hankering for some hoops?
Right now.
MSG tomorrow, 1 o'clock.
That's cool.
Maybe we'll see a promo for Giants Training Camp Live, which is starting a few weeks during training camp
on
MSG.
Paul
is here to lobby and bribe me to try to get on that show as much as possible.
Oh,
and I'm going to drive a hard bargain. 201-939-4513. Antonio's down in Memphis. Antonio, good morning.
Yeah, how you doing, fam?
Doing all right, Antonio. How are you?
Yeah, well, you took my answer with Joe Morris, but I have an issue with most of the fans. Nobody ever mentioned Tiki Barber, man. Tiki Barber was the Giant. He was Mr. Giant, man.
Underrated?
Well, no, I think fans today that can't stand him, and considering persona non grata, I think a lot of people do forget how really good Tiki was and is really the Giants' best running back of all time, but it's not
I think Tiki Barber is a borderline Hall of Famer. You can have that conversation. He was that good.
Yeah, but fans hate him now.
I don't understand that, man. For a guy that carried the Giants, the character Giants on his backs for so many seasons. I mean, I just can't understand. How could you go so blue with a guy like that, man?
The two things that hurt the public perception of Tiki are clearly the off-the-field things that happened after he retired as a Giant.
Taking shots at Eli and Coughlin.
Right.
But Eli wasn't that good when he first started.
The fact that he retired early and still left some yards on the table, I think, makes fans rather bitter.
And missed the Super Bowl, for that matter.
And he did not get a Super Bowl. His only appearance was when they got wrecked by the Ravens.
Yeah.
I think those things kind of make fans look at Tiki with a little bit of a shaded look.
Though I'm surprised, though. I thought, Antonio and Paul, that fans would turn around to him a little bit quicker than they have, but there's still a lot of animosity out there. People have not softened on Tiki at all, and it's been a while since he said something.
But you know what? Even the folks who are down on him, I think if you say, okay, just give me a second now, what'd you think of him strictly on Sunday as a player? I think those same people who crucify him would then say, oh, yeah, he was a great player, but I just can't stand him.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
I just never understood that, man. Tiki was the Giants for years, man.
I hear you.
Well, that's all I wanted to say to the Giants fans, man. Give Tiki a break, man.
Appreciate the call, Antonio. Thanks, man.
All right.
Thanks. And, you know, when was the last time Tiki said something that could be considered, like, controversial or negative towards the Giants? It's been a while, right? It's got to be 2-3 years by
now. It has been a while, and nowadays he's on CBS Sports Radio Network.
So he's on every day. But granted, it's not on in New York either, so it's not like if he says something, someone here is going to hear it.
But, you know, with Twitter now, if he does rip the Giants,
does he tweet
Tiki? Going to make its way here. Well, not necessarily from him, but from people who hear him. You know, there are Giants fans all over this country who will tweet something that somebody says.
I'm not sure if Tiki's on Twitter or not. Neil, do you know if Tiki's on Twitter?
But here, let me say this, John. Again, he's now part of the media. It's his job to say what he believes or what he thinks is the appropriate analysis. And if it's negative, it's negative. I mean, I guess the two things that bother me about what he said is the stuff about Eli, because I thought he talked about player reaction to Eli in the locker room, and that stuff should not have been brought out into the public domain.
And he also talked about, like, Eli's heart and his, like, ability as a human, as a competitor, which can be insulting.
I didn't agree with that.
Right.
And I thought that that was out of line by him, and I also happen to disagree with the premise. And then the other thing I thought that he did that I disagreed with was when he got on Coach Coughlin. Because Coach Coughlin and Coach Ingram helped make Tiki Barber the true superstar that he was when they cured his fumbleitis.
Correct.
And fed him the ball a billion times every weekend. And allow Tiki Barber to shine and do what he does best.
Yeah, they trusted him as a full-time running back when Jim Fassel didn't, Reeves didn't.
Well, Fassel did actually give him the ball a lot and did make a full-time guy. But then he became even more of a focal point after Coughlin got him. It wasn't that Fassel made him a part-timer now, but he was more of a focal point when Tom got him. And here's the thing.
I always thought Fossil split carriage with him and somebody else, like a Dane or something
Well, Dane came here in the 2000 season, okay? And he did. It was thunder and lightning.
Right.
Tiki had over 1,000. Dane had 700 in that 2000 season. But Tiki had done well before that. You look up his numbers. He had done well before that. But it was really when Tom got here that he became the bell cow.
Yeah, you know, Tiki's biggest first big year was in 2002 under Fossil. He ran for 1,300 yards, and then he had 1,200 the next year under Fossil. So that's fair.
So here's the thing, though. Here's the thing that I want to say about Tiki. Okay, I disagree with those two things he said, but you know what? I've always found him, to me at least, my relationship with him, he's been a class guy. He certainly was very respectful to me and certainly got along with him great when he was here. And I never could say one thing bad about his playing career other than the fumbleitis. And then early in his career when he didn't know how to pick up a blitz, but then he became good at it. And he learned. And like David Wilson's going to have to learn. So, you know, I don't know. Underrated? I don't know. I think he's a borderline Hall of Famer.
201-939-4513, Gerson in California. Gerson, good morning. How are you today, pal?
Good morning. I'm doing good. Well, I haven't been on a Giants fan for too long. Price is 04, 05.
Okay.
So I can't really comment too much on the older players besides what I've watched, but whatever Paul said, I'll go with it.
Thank you.
Well, hey, I follow him a lot on Twitter and the comments he makes, the way he talks about players. So can I go against him, especially on older players?
I've been around a long time, my friend. And you know the scary part? I consider myself a Giants historian. So even though
I was going to call you the historian, but I'm like, I don't want to.
That's all right. No, it's okay because, I mean, I studied these guys for, you know, decades before I even started to watch games. So, yeah, I've really taken a lot of time to learn a lot about this organization. After all, it is a flagship of the NFL, and it's important.
Gotcha. Thank you.
Thank you.
For the current draft, actually, I was hoping you were not going to say anyone's name until the end, but I was going to say Webster, and after that deal.
Oh, there you go.
So Webby is my number one. So
Gerson's our guy.
We have smart callers on this show,
we
John.
We do. We really do.
No, because I've watched the games, and Webby's played, man, he's played good for us the whole time. The problem is that we had Revis on the other side, so he kind of was not looked at or talked about, but I mean, Webby is a Pro Bowl player, man.
You know, for every person,
even with one hand and half a hammy, he was still covering number one. That speaks for itself.
Look, he had his worst year in a long, long time last season.
Probably since 06, right? Or 07?
Yeah. And I get that. And he was banged up, and I'm willing to make those, I don't want to say excuses, but I'm willing to
put those as legitimate reasons for why he had a bad year.
Yes, I am. But I know he's getting older, and you have to watch
where
his curve starts to turn.
No question.
I don't think it's there yet, though, John. And for every person who has written me on Twitter this offseason and shredded Corey Webster like an onion, would you kindly go back to the 2011 season when he became a lockdown corner during the Super Bowl run?
Yep.
Could you please do that for a change before you get on Twitter and hammer me about
it? The secondary played great in the playoffs that year. Fantastic.
So,
thanks, Gerson.
All right. Thank you, guys. Have a good day.
Hey, you too. Take it easy. Now, I'm happy this guy called today because we talked to me and Dave from Rochester had a conversation about Paul a couple days ago.
Oh, no.
And we discussed what you would be doing on the 4th of July. And, you know, he made the point that, and then Dave, I'll bring you up in a second, that you were going to be walking around, you know, getting your running on your Nikes. And I said, well, I think in the patriotic spirit, I had you wearing an all red, white, and blue outfit. And I think I had either a Roman candle or a gigantic sparkler taped to your back as you ran through northern New Jersey trying to get your exercise in. Was that anywhere close to the truth? No, actually, I take that back. It was the sparkler on your back, dressed in red, white, and blue, a hot dog in one hand, a cheeseburger in the other. That's what I had for you on the 4th of July. Was I close to being accurate?
I did see the Hudson River fireworks.
Okay, that's good.
Does that qualify?
All right, fireworks were involved. Did you eat a hot dog or a hamburger on the 4th of July?
No, I ate a grilled chicken Caesar salad.
Well, that's weak. Not even Italian food?
I have the grilled chicken Caesar salad very often here at the Giants complex.
I know, but
the
it's the 4th of July. You're supposed to have a little barbecue. I know you're not a big barbecue guy, but a simple hamburger or a
hot dog.
I'm a huge
barbecue guy. I just don't have enough of barbecues to go to.
You never want to go to the barbecue place that we go to in Dallas all the time.
Oh, no. That's because you guys get the barbecue food. I don't mind barbecued steaks or burgers on the grill, but I don't like all that sauce junk on it.
No, but the place in Dallas has the sauce on the side. You don't have to have the sauce on the
side. You never told me that.
You never asked.
Okay. You never told me that.
Heart 8 Barbecue, man.
Usually,
it's the place to be at Big D.
Every time I hear about barbecue place, I automatically think that they're going to take all kinds of maroon, brown, and red gunk and just throw it all over the food. And that's not me.
Fair enough. All right, I want to bring up
the only red stuff I want on my food is the sauce on the pasta.
Do you have any good 4th of July Paul Dottino story when you're running around, somebody pulling you aside, you like rescuing a child from something? I mean, come on. What do you got? You got to have something for me.
The only thing I could tell you, okay, the only thing I could tell you about the 4th of July is that I was on the banks of the Hudson River getting ready to watch the Macy's fireworks, right?
Okay.
And
were you wearing giant paraphernalia?
No.
Why not? You could be. You're Mr. Giant.
Oh, God.
It's okay.
Anyway, here's the point. You asked me for a story. I'm going to tell you what happened.
Okay, what do you
I
got?
Broke the law.
What did you do?
Well, there was a fenced-in area along the riverbank, okay, to where people were not supposed to go because it was fenced in. But because the angle of the fireworks wasn't quite like I wanted, and I saw some people, like, you know, spread the fence out and run through the fence, I went with them.
Did you really?
Yeah, I did.
You're a scofflaw.
I went and I ran through the fence.
Paul the scofflaw, Dottino.
And I went right to the edge of that riverbank. Came real close to falling into the Hudson, too.
I'm going to have Murph call some of his buddies and drag you in.
Yeah, so anyway.
You broke the law.
I ran through the fence and broke the law, but got to see the fireworks.
I would have enjoyed if you had to hop the fence. That would have been more fun.
You know what? I have done that on occasion.
Back in the day, I'm sure, when
back
you're a little
in
bit
the day.
Younger.
I was a little bit younger.
All right. Hopefully this has given us some material to work with for this phone call. So we're going to go with Dave in Rochester to close up the show. Dave, good morning.
Come on, Paulie. I see the sailor on the nation's birthday.
What's up, Dave?
Hey, I got to say, I saw you on NFL Network, and you look great, man. Especially, looks like that Armani suit he was wearing. Johnny should have seen it. I think he's taking those Nike and he's walking all the way to the bank.
Oh, wow. So, Paul, new suit?
You know, that one wasn't new, but I appreciate the compliment anyway. You know, we trade. You know what happened? Let me tell you something, Dave. Okay, let me tell you something.
Yeah.
A couple things happened, about 3 years ago, when Don Sperling here with the Giants broadcast team gave me the opportunity to start doing more video stuff and TV and everything. And I just decided, you know what? If I'm Italian and I got to go on camera, I need to pick this whole thing up. So that's when I went hog wild crazy. Okay, went out, went to the mall, did what I had to do, picked up a lot of top-notch stuff, and that's what you usually see on the video.
Now,
so
see, now,
thank
here's,
you for noticing.
Dave, now here's the truth. We brought him in to do videos a couple years ago. He showed us what he had, and Don said the only way you're getting on camera is if you get rid of all those leisure suits from the 70s and get some actually clothes bought in the last 10 years.
Hey, you know what, though? Let's just throw a pop out. Andrew Mark helped us out last year, too.
Yes, they did. They did a great job.
They were very nice,
no
helping us with that outerwear.
Well, yes.
Well, for what it's worth, I did know it's Paulie, and you look great.
Thanks, Dave. Appreciate it.
But, Johnny, I wanted to comment yesterday. I'm going to go back to the Ali Sherman thing, and yesterday was a really great call. You know, honestly, when that gentleman had his father come on,
yeah,
I thought that was really, really cool, and there was a lot of Ali Sherman talk yesterday, but I wanted to get Paul's take about what he thought about Ali Sherman, underrated, overrated. I checked some of his records, and he was the 9 seasons he's with the Giants. He was 57 and 51 or something was his record. But his first 2 seasons, he did really good. I think he won 10 or 12 wins. But then after that was a disaster. I remember my grandfather hating Ali Sherman. thought he was a disaster. I just want to see what Paul, underrated or overrated?
Well, again, it depends on your point of view. I think Ali Sherman was an outstanding football man, an extremely smart and intelligent football mind. But he lacked a lot of the people skills that you need to have in that position.
Did he have the talent to win, though, after those first couple years?
And that's the thing. The roster got old and fell apart around him. They had made some very ill-advised moves. And as the team started to crumble, Ali was not the kind of guy who was going to soften things to kind of help them along. As things started to fall apart, Ali's hard-nosed,
it didn't help,
military-type demeanor. In a lot of ways, he was like Coughlin, not quite the same, but he had a lot of his same traits in terms of football acumen, very rigid in his ways, very demanding. And unfortunately, as the team was going down the tubes and the roster quality was sliding, he could not adapt to that. And that was a big problem. The other thing about Allie, and this is unfortunate, but Wellington Mara would tell you the same thing. Allie took things personally with players, and he held a lot of personal grudges. And
big doghouse?
Yeah. And that also hurt him. And, you know, the shame of it is, again, a brilliant football mind, especially offensively. Brilliant, brilliant mind. And a lot of the players, when they fell out of favor with him and they went into the doghouse, they felt disrespected. And I don't think that necessarily helped bring out the best in those players because they really resented him so much. Now, I will tell you, during the late 80s and early 90s, there were players who did not like Bill Parcells. Players who hated his guts.
Well, Sims hated him his first 4 or 5 years here. Hated him.
But they respected him. And they did what they had to do because he pushed their buttons the right way to get the most out of them.
The team won games. It's hard to be that way if you don't win.
Right. And Allie didn't push guys' buttons. He just knew one way.
Right.
And if he put you in his doghouse, you were in his doghouse. You know, I got to know Allie over the years, long after he retired. I had many conversations with him on the phone, and I loved talking to him. I couldn't get off the phone with him. I loved the guy so much. And I loved talking football and X's and O's. I mean, a brilliant football man. So do you want me to call him underrated? I think he's underrated as a football mind because people look at the 500 or so record, and it was so unbalanced, so terrific at the beginning and so poor at the end, and then he never got another coaching job after the Giants fired him. So, yeah, I think people who don't know who he was and how much football knowledge he had do tend to underrate him just by looking at the stat line in the history books. How's that for an answer?
Well, that's a very interesting, Paul. Thank you. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
All right, Dave, thanks for the call, man.
All right, guys. Talk to you.
Have a good one. Yeah, Andrew, I think it was, yesterday. I think if I had the call here, I think it was Andrew in Florida called in. And he talked to me for about a minute, and then he put his dad on the phone. Talking about it. And the question that we had yesterday was, they're actually the calls that brought up. They go, we want to talk about who we think the most underrated Giant was. And his dad brought up Allie Sherman and just was like, you know, he really didn't have a good roster or got old. He had no one to play with. And he always just thought that Allie Sherman was kind of unappreciated and got a bum rap considering how poorly his tenure ended here. But he didn't have a whole lot of talent to work with, you know, a lot of older players that broke down. Like you mentioned, Y.A. Tittle didn't have a whole lot left when he got here. So I just thought it was very interesting that he thought Allie Sherman as a coach was very underrated as when he was here with the Giants.
The problem is when you talk about a coach, it's not just the X's and O's, John.
Yep.
It really does involve everything else, including managing the personalities and handling that locker room. And when things started to go bad, you know, that's where Allie was subpar. And that really hurt him. You know, had he been able to manage those players better and not stick certain guys in the doghouse and not be so rough and rigid about it, and had he maybe treated the defensive side of the ball, those players, with a bit more tact, maybe, just maybe, he could have prevented some of those slides from being as bad as they were.
I want to throw one other name out there for underrated, and I know if he was here, he would suggest it, and he's not here, so I have to back him up. Howard Cross.
You know what? Howard Cross, in my time, I mean, this is my 31st year now covering the Giants.
You are old.
Yeah.
You 60 yet?
75. Howard Cross is the best blocking tight end I have ever seen.
Could he, if he was in today's league, with the players being maybe a little bit smaller, in some ways, could he have been a starting offensive tackle in this league? Could he have been a starting left tackle?
No.
Not big enough?
No, I just...
Because he's just as big as Will Beatty is, well, let's be honest.
Well, Howard, I want to say Howard got up to almost 270.
Right.
Near the end of his career. I think he would tell you that. I'm pretty sure he probably was.
And he could have been heavier if he wanted to. I mean, he could have put on more muscle, I think, right?
I suppose, but you know what? Howard was just... He was such a dominating blocker as a tight end. I don't necessarily know See, for him, it was sealing the corner. It was the run blocking. It was tying up his guy.
So it was more angles than it was brute force?
Well, he was big, but he was a smart blocker.
Right.
You know, Howard Cross was not the kind of guy who was going to necessarily punch you in the mouth.
So you almost think some of his strength as a smart blocker would get taken away as a tackle because you're always assigned to kind of the same guy, at least on pass protection.
Well, yeah, and plus the fact that tackles need very, very quick feet to deal with the kind of pass rushers that you're dealing with today.
Well, I figure as a tight end, he would have that, no?
Howard was not fleet of foot. He was not.
Oh, I'm happy he's not here right now. He might pick you up and throw you out of the TPC.
But, again, when you talk about just the guys who played the tight end position, the best blocker that these eyes have ever seen in 31 years.
And Howard will also say that if he wasn't asked to block so much, he'd have a lot more catches too.
He loves to say that. He loves to believe that he never got his just due because he didn't put up the stats because the Giants didn't throw him the ball a lot. But if you go and look at Howard Cross's stats, you'll find that in the middle of his career, he was catching 25, 30, 35 passes, catching 5 or 6 touchdown catches a year. Howard Cross's numbers as a receiving tight end were actually I would say, adequate and much more respectable than people want to give him credit for, because in the latter years, he became strictly a blocker and they hardly ever threw to him. And then, of course, he had a couple of drops and then people kind of left him with that tag.
Yeah, from 92, 27 catches, 93, 21, 94, 31. And that was kind of his best stretch.
Right. He had that stretch of three, and he caught some touchdowns there, too.
And that was before, obviously, people, you know, today, some of the younger kids don't realize that tight ends just didn't get a ton of catches in the early 90s either. You had some guys like the Jay Novacek's, Todd Christensen from Oakland had a lot of catches with the Raiders. Obviously, Shannon Sharp then eventually came along, but... you know, the guy in Buffalo, I'm trying to remember his name. He was actually a pretty good receiving tight end. Yeah, Pete Metzlar.
Metzlar was more of a blocker, actually.
No, but the other guy, they played two tight ends in Buffalo. You had Metzlar, remember the other guy. He was actually a pretty good receiving tight end. And I'm trying to remember the other guy. Philadelphia Eagles. Not Jackson. Keith Jackson. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Keith Jackson. I wanted to say Ricky Jackson. Keith Jackson.
See, the one thing interesting, John, about the tight end position with the Giants is that if you go right before Howard Cross, you know, you go back to some of the darker years.
Bavaro
before him, Zeke Mowat before him.
Right.
Who, again, great blockers, and they were also terrific pass receivers.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what kind of hurts Howard, is that people were spoiled with the whole Bavaro and Mowat thing. And, you know, actually, Bavaro, let me correct myself. Bavaro was at the end of Howard Cross.
Yeah, they played the same team for a few years.
For like a year or two.
Yeah.
Okay.
Howard has nothing but good things to say about Mark Bavaro, by the way. Very good friends.
Well, yeah. Yeah. Mowat had the great year in the mid-80s. Okay. And then Bavaro came in. And then Howard Cross and him, let's see. Howard played, I think, 1 or 2 years with Bavaro. Before Bavaro was forced.
Well, Howard arrived in 1989. That was his rookie year.
Right.
Bavaro was here until like 91,
right.
So he probably played 3 years together.
They were both on the 90 team.
Yeah, exactly.
That won the Super Bowl. But before Cross, you had Mowat and Bavaro, and I think people got spoiled by those guys. But here's the thing that I want to tell you. Back before those guys, before Mowat and Bavaro, you had the likes of Tom Mullady and Gary Shirk, who were not blockers, who were strictly pass receivers.
Interesting.
And so
I'm not familiar with those guys, I got to be honest.
And that's fine. My point is that those guys who caught passes but did not block, okay, they were not really very good players, quite frankly. And people saw that and said, okay, I guess that's what the Giant tight end is. He's not really a blocker. He's more of a receiver. And
that's really
half
flipped
a player.
Now. That's interesting.
Exactly. That's exactly what happened. And unfortunately for Howard Cross, you know what? After him, you had Pete Mitchell.
5 touchdowns in 93 for Cross, by the way. 4 touchdowns in 94.
Yeah.
So that's 9 touchdowns in 2 years. That's pretty darn good.
In those days, that was very good.
Yeah.
Okay. After Howard, okay, you got to remember something. The 2000 season, okay, Pete Mitchell.
Well, they kept bringing people in to replace Cross as a receiving tight end, and
right.
They kept failing.
And Pete Mitchell, the former Jacksonville Jaguar, was signed as a free agent and was the starting tight end in the 2000 season.
Right.
Howard technically was the second tight end, and again, the blocking tight end. I don't think he got many passes that year, John. What, less than 10, right?
In 2000?
Yeah.
4 catches.
There you go. Because Pete Mitchell was the guy. that year. And I think Pete caught 50 passes that year for the Giants
right.
in 2000. So the bookends around him were receivers. So people look at Howard Cross and say, oh, you know what? He really didn't catch many passes, blah, 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 blah. They don't understand. Howard Cross is truly a great Giant. And what he did for this team as a blocking tight end was truly, truly something to be marveled at.
So the theme of this 10-minute conversation that you agree with me, Howard Cross is is an underrated player.
Yes.
Excellent. We went for a whole hour.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. You get very excited about these historical Giant things. I understand.
You know, we got to sign off, but there was one caller on hold for a while. That's been blinking a while. Did you want to just
No, he's not on hold. They're just dialing in.
Well, did you want to?
Do you want me to put him on? All right.
Just sneak him in. Just because it's been blinking a while, and I kind of got long-winded.
Well, shocking. We're going blind. All right, caller. Caller, you are on the air. I don't know who you are. What's your name and where you're from?
From Maryland, Eastern Maryland.
And what's your name, sir?
Good evening.
Hi.
How are you? What do you got? What do you want to say?
I just want to touch on some bases on the running back situation.
Sure.
As far as Wilson, I think they need to give him a good shot at the job. As far as we should use him like we did Tiki Barber more so, and just spread the ball around a lot more. And I like to see Ruben Randall more so in the slot, put Cruz on the outside, and see if this man is really real. If he is real, we can put one guy really deal with Knicks for the most part. That's how I'm facing this year.
Well, I think looking ahead, though, if you want Randall to potentially replace Knicks, you want to play him on the outside because that's where he's going to have to go if the Giants can't bring back Knicks next year.
Yeah, but you figure that third slot, that far as that position, I'm looking at it like this. Jernigan, he's not ready. He hasn't got his chance. Same with Sonoris Moss. He's going to turn into him. That's how I feel. these small wide receivers, it don't work good with us. We should put Randall in the slot. We have a big unit this year. And, hey, it's hard. We got position, just like basketball, like we always talk about. Put him in the post, you can't do nothing with him. You get in front of the man can't get in front of him. He's going to be passing the fence every time. So I know I might be going out on a limb, but I just think we should have that big unit out there as far as that goes.
All right, appreciate the call. Thanks a lot, bud.
All right.
You have a good one. You can use Randall on his height and use him outside. I just hate to take Cruz out of that slot spot because he's so good there.
I agree with you, John. And let's face it, that's why the Giants just made him the highest-paid slot receiver in football.
And I'm a big Randall guy. I mean, I think, if you would have had a conversation with me in week 8 last year, I would have been like, I don't know if Randall's going to make it. I'm not sure. But he's really turned it around, and the coaches have nothing but good things to say about him. And trust me, Kevin Gilbride Sr. does not go around and say nice things about players unless they deserve it.
John.
And he was raving about him at the end of minicamp.
And, from the very first time I saw him at rookie camp, I could not help but drool over his skill set.
Right.
And the question was, how mature was he going to be as a rookie? And unfortunately, he was very immature as a rookie.
Yeah, he was. And the Giants called him out on a publicly coaches players, and he cleaned up his act.
And the sky's the limit for this guy.
Yeah.
I really believe that. I think he could be really, really good.
Paul, we appreciate it. And Paul, by the way, when I go on my second vacation, I know you guys are looking forward to that. He'll be replacing me for a couple days next week, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, right? If I'm not mistaken.
Yes, I got the next week one.
Yeah.
And then Lance is the following.
And then Lance is the Monday and Tuesday the following.
Right.
So you'll have your fill of DiTino next week, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. So get your historical Giant stuff ready, Paul DiTino's on parade. Expect 2 hours of Joe Morrison 3 days a week next week. Very exciting. Thank you, Paul, as always.
Thank you, John.
And that's all the time we have for Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. For Paul, I'm Schmelk. We'll see you next time. Have a good one. See you tomorrow morning.